Welcome everyone, this is the Twice Over Film Club and I'm your host Faraz. Today is our full episode on Whiplash. This episode does contain spoilers. Remember to check out thetwiceover.com to see your tally for this film and every film we've watched on the Film Club. If you have any suggestions for us, hit us up at thetwiceover on any of the socials and we'll add it to our list. Follow us while you're there to keep up with our watch schedule. Alright, it's myself, Farhan, and Fahad for this one. Alright, so let's start with the narrative actually, because I assume we're weighing the direction quite heavily here, because the story itself is very simplistic, it's very basic, but the engagement level that the movie maintains for the audience is really good, which basically means that, you know, the direction was really good, the overall pacing was pretty good.
Right, you see the drummer.
The execution was well done.
Yeah, I mean, the story is pretty simple, but you have this drummer, this kid in his school, and he's progressing with his career pretty fast. And that's what makes it exciting. Most movies, they have that climax be the point where the person's succeeding at whatever they're doing. In this movie, they almost have it in the middle, right? They have him at his pinnacle in the middle of the movie. And that.
What would the pinnacle be?
The first chair in his jazz band.
Oh, when he gets conservatory. Switched over to the first chair. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Really, I think it would be in when he tackles J.K. Simmons. the whole scene where he gets hit by a truck,
the truck,
and you know,
yeah,
and then he gets kicked out.
Yeah, for me, the pinnacle was because I assumed once he, you know, when he loses that music book and like the sheets, and he gets asked to be the one who performs on stage, and they get first prize. Like, all right, he's made it. I mean, essentially that alludes to that he's already become first chair because he knew the music like the back of his hand. But yeah. That's interesting.
Climax, though?
No, it's
from
the character's point of view.
Kind
right?
of, yeah. In my eyes, yes, because okay. He had already reached what his goal was at that point. Because he's not trying to be the greatest drummer or one of the greats at that age, right? That's his long-term goal. But at that time, his goal was to be first chair in the studio band, and he achieves it right there. So when he does that, I was like, all right, now it's going to go downhill. Like, now the conflict is going to hit, right? And yeah, it does.
There's a couple of different conflicts. I think there's a couple of different, I would say, you know.
Sure. There's the inner conflict with him progressing himself and his skills, right? There's a conflict with his with the composer. I guess a minor one with his family.
Family, yeah.
You don't see that as much.
So in terms of like, I'm talking about like in terms of like you know, traditional storytelling, we think about like exposition, all that, whatever, jazz, climaxes.
Uh-huh.
There's like three that I can think of in this movie.
Sure.
Which is, I think, it's kind of interesting because the story takes it's roller coasters. I think, you know. So that first one being what you guys were mentioning, right? Where he reaches that goal that he had, a preliminary goal. Obviously the Lincoln Center band or whatever was probably his like ultimate, but he gets first chair. Then I would say second climax would be when he loses first chair because, and with the truck and all that stuff, which was a crazy scene.
Yeah.
And then I would say when he, and that's the same time that he tackles
Fletcher.
He tackles J.K. Simmons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fletcher. And then third might be the last scene.
Yeah. He's like, you know, improvising that scene.
Which is an interesting way to close off the movie.
Yeah, Farhan, that's a good point. It is a roller coaster. I guess that's what my point was too, to say that, I guess you're right. There's more than one climax, but the first one being the one where he gets promoted to first chair,
because
then you kind of know when you're watching, like, all right, there's too much time left in the movie for this to just work out the rest of the way. Like, you know, he's gonna have to face some challenges now.
Yeah,
I guess our writing scores were pretty much in agreement, right? We were all within 5 points. For us, you had 85.
Yeah, writing, we were really close.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you guys think about the characters overall? Were they likable? Were they assholes? were they entertaining to root for? Because I went with B and C. They're all assholes in this movie, but they're still fun to root for.
Really? Okay.
And the writing helps with that. Yeah.
I agree with you. I hated Fletcher, but you're supposed to hate him, right? Like, he's a straight up asshole. And then with
Andrew as well, right?
Neiman.
Yeah.
With Neiman, yeah. So you want to root for him, but clearly he's kind of an asshole. The way he breaks up with his girlfriend, the way he dismisses, I don't know who
his
it is
cousins
at the dinner table. Yeah, it's his cousins or something. How he dismisses their success.
He's also abrasive to his other to the other people in his band.
Yeah,
to the other drummers.
His peers,
right?
Yeah. Yep. And he's just and you want to root for him, but you know, like, his obsession is somewhat unhealthy, so you kind of don't want to root for him at the same time, because you know rooting for him means like his own demise.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's how I felt.
Well, own demise or his own, you know, sense of greatness.
Sure.
Yeah.
So here's what I like this movie for how they built the characters, because they are both neither of them is a hero nor an anti-hero. You know, there's moments where you're meant to hate both of them. There's a moment where you're meant to root for them, and I don't think that one really dominates over the other. I think especially in the last scene, you're kind of left rooting for both.
Mm.
And for instance, how that last scene finishes.
Yeah, how does it?
You know, we've talked about movies that have ambiguous endings.
What did you read into it?
What do you think happens from there?
What did you read into it, Fran?
I would just say that they both, like, in terms of what happens afterwards, is they both succeed. You know, they both are, Miles Teller puts this crazy drum performance, and he's probably going to go on to do great things.
Yeah.
J.K. Simmons made his Charlie Parker.
Yeah, he found him, right?
He found him, and that was both of their goals. They were both achieved through unconventional means, mm-hmm. but that's the whole thing about this movie, is that they put out this premise that greatness can only be achieved by leaving everything else in your life, by being an asshole and just practicing and practicing and practicing. And
then going off the rails and doing a drum solo.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. The way Fahad, same thing. Like, I read into it that Fletcher, you know, he comes to the realization, all right, Neiman is the real deal. You know, he has it in him. And Neiman, while he's drumming, he's like, I get what Fletcher was trying to get out of me. Like, why he is the way he is. But at the same time, like, Farhan, they may have had that realization and may have that short-term achievement. But at what cost? I think I expect that, you know, long-term, and I'm not saying like a year or two, I'm talking like maybe 5 years from then, maybe 10 years, like,
yeah,
the cost of it to achieve that, for that achievement at that moment, is going to catch up to them in like 5-10 years kind of thing.
Oh yeah, 100%.
What do you mean by that?
But like, that's the stuff that they're now...
The personal cost? The professional cost?
Yeah.
Or
so okay. This would go back to that dinner scene where with the cousins. And, you know, I think it's a lot of foreshadowing there as to what happens to someone who is that obsessed with a craft. And he talks about how, like, I'd rather be, you know, dead at 34 and have people talking about me at the dinner table than, you know, live to 90 and no one knows who I am. And I think it's kind of saying, like, you know, he's... Like, that's his future, pretty much. Like, pure obsession over his craft to the point that it will cost him his life, but as long as it means he was one of the greats, it's fine for him. I don't know. I think it's a little dark.
Oh, definitely dark and definitely exaggerated and very dramatic, because that's what they're trying to show you. It's the cost of greatness.
Yeah.
This is, if you want greatness, this is what it costs, and you're not going to get it outside of, like, very, very somebody who has a very critical lens and is pushing you. And is that true?
Probably not. Probably works better in movies. You
know, probably not. Yeah. Exactly.
Speaking of what works in movies and what doesn't, how realistic is it that Fletcher self-sabotages himself at one of the highest stages by messing up what's called Andrew's performance, right? He misinforms them on what piece they're going to do. He thinks they're going to do Whiplash, but they end up doing a different piece. And Fletcher looks like a fool, right? And so does Andrew, but why does he have that high of a need of revenge at like that stage? I don't know. It wasn't realistic to me.
Well, I mean, he cost him his career, so...
Sure, but he's still
up there.
I
can understand the revenge, but why he would sabotage himself, I don't get that. You know, because it's his drummer.
Yeah.
And it's his band. He looks like an idiot.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but It's for dramatic effect. We can all say,
yeah, of course it is. But also from everything we know about Fletcher, every little thing he's done to push, you know, Andrew a little further. Maybe he did that to push Andrew a little further to, and then Andrew responds, you know, in the positive, the way he should, the way someone who wouldn't get discouraged would respond. And that's
well, he
why
was
Fletcher
discouraged.
Is able to.
Right, he was discouraged, but then it was persistence that brought him back. I mean, it doesn't add to his encouragement, because he's always been self-motivated to be one of the greats. I think
Fletcher's not doing
militaristic, oppressive like tactics. It works on someone who might not have the same goals as him, right, to beat it out of him, but Andrew seems pretty self-motivated. I don't know.
Yeah, and obviously I don't think that those tactics are, because he always mentions that story, like, oh, what about, I forget the story, like
when
the
some dude is, threw like, a symbol, right?
Yeah, I'm like, dude, did he just throw a symbol like that one time in a moment of like passion, or was he doing that like every practice? Was he berating him every single practice? Was he like, you know, verbally abusing him every single practice? I doubt it, you know. I doubt that's how their relationship was, that he became the next Charlie, or he became
Charlie
Parker.
I don't even know if that's a true story.
Whether it is or isn't, but like, it's just a bad tool for the story in general here. Because that's what I kept thinking. I'm like, dude, throwing a symbol once when you're like super pissed off because something's not working out for you is different from like constant abuse, you know?
Yeah, and they used that probably 5 times throughout the movie.
Exactly, that's why I was just saying.
And it's like, you can add on other stuff. You know what I mean? You don't have to use the same thing. Say, oh, this one time he called him a poo-poo head. but that's, I know, and that's, we all agree it's really dramatic, but that's the point of the movie, is that it is,
it's intense.
You know, you're not going to get this effect if it wasn't as dramatic.
Sure.
Yeah.
But
if it wasn't as outrageous.
Think about that story, right? It gets told so much that it becomes like lore, that it becomes legend.
Right.
And
Yeah.
It definitely contains, in that story, it contains abuse, right? One person abusing another. Mm-hmm. And the first time Andrew hears it, he just smiles and nods as if, yeah, that's what it takes to become a legend. He doesn't concern himself to put himself in that position where a symbol is being thrown at him and to consider the abuse. But later, you know, things change when he is facing the abuse himself. He holds negative feelings towards Fletcher, right? Hmm. It's just a myth or legend that gets used over and over by Fletcher to justify his own actions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking a lot about, in my opinion, the overall themes of the movie, which I scored really high. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because there's obviously the surface level sacrifice that is in movies like this all the time. You know, like, oh, he's giving up his time with his family. He's giving up, you know, he's not going to be in a relationship because he's so focused on this dream of his. But like, more than anything, and I think when they bring in the story of a former student, I think his name was Casey, the trumpeter, how he committed suicide, combine that with the scene at the dinner table and how he talks about, you know, it's okay to be like dead at a young age if, you know, you've achieved your goal or your dreams. The real sacrifice is that Andrew is making is like the sacrifice of his own mental health to achieve it. That's like the true sacrifice that he's having to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was like the theme that I really was like, this is where this movie is shining and is doing a really good job of presenting it and executing on it.
Do you think Andrew is guilty of participating in his own abuse? The way he treats his body, the way, right?
That's why I was saying that I want to root for him, but at the same time, I kind of don't want to, because it's self-abuse at the same time as there is obviously external abuse from Fletcher. But yeah, that's why it's hard to root for him.
Yeah. It reminds me, there's some parallels with like a domestic abuse situation where one partner who's being abused keeps going back and people on the outside are like, what? Why? It's like the same here, where we're questioning why Andrew wants to still work with Fletcher. It's like, no, don't.
Yeah. I mean, do you know what's awesome about this movie? Mm-hmm. From the very beginning, I kept thinking to myself, how has no one stepped up and challenged Fletcher? Like, when he is not just verbally abusive, but if he gets physically abusive, like, how has no one, like, you know, fought back? I mean, these are young kids. They're probably stronger than him. This dude's old. at least some of them. And I was just so happy that they actually had a moment where Andrew does lose it and like tackles him. And like, because that's the kind of reaction I would expect from, you know, students who are determined, who are talented, and who are being abused. Because how much can you take, really, right?
Yeah. I mean, he literally slaps him like 6 times in a scene.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That was
like, just straight up slaps him.
Yeah.
But
so there's definitely stuff in here that I didn't realize was real, or didn't realize that it's possible even. But like his hands bleeding from drumming.
Okay.
And the insane amount of sweat. I guess I know it gets hot like at a concert or something, but like, I don't know. I was just like, dude, this guy is dripping sweat like he's Shaq at the free throw line.
So, yeah, interesting well, about that.
That's definitely a thing with drummers, though.
I mean,
I'm on a page. Hang on a sec. I googled how realistic is whiplash. Ask a Juilliard professor, and the first question is the blood real, right? And this Juilliard professor is like, yeah. No, that's not realistic. If you're drawing that much blood, you're probably holding the drumsticks wrong. Your technique's wrong or something. At the most,
because they don't like the most, they have like calluses, hard,
right? At the most, they have calluses and then popping blisters and stuff like that. But the blood's
okay.
Yeah, the way speaking about the way that he held his drumsticks.
Sure,
I am not a drummer, but I do watch a lot of drumming.
Are you talking about the underhand position?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, especially in jazz, where you need precision in timing and in terms of like. You know, some pads even change sound as you go from the center to the outside and you want a different sound. I don't know if jazz is like that, but you had to be really precise. And that's not the way to hold a stick if you're going to be precise. I'm talking out of my butt, but I've watched a lot of drumming and that's not it.
Okay.
So maybe that's like one way to do it in a particular drill or something like that. But in this kinds of stuff that he's doing, you're holding it the way that people usually would hold it, you know what I mean, at the end of the stick or in an area that's comfortable. That does not seem comfortable. The whole point is for your sticks to be comfortable in your hands and relaxed, for you to be relaxed and not rigid.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he was. So
I mean, I did see one interview where Miles Teller was talking about how he did like obviously research and like sat down with jazz drummers to get an idea of how they drum, because it is obviously different for the different genres, whether you're a, like you said, a metal drummer, a rock and roll, or even a classical. So the one thing he mentioned in that interview that I was watching is the way he like positions himself, like in his seat, how he kind of leans over and then to the side with like one shoulder down. Mm-hmm. And he's like, that's a very jazz posture for the drummers, like versus like, you know, if you're rock, you got your chest out, your shoulders back, and you're like, you know, you're very theatrical. And if you're like a grunge like drummer, you got the head bob going. And like, he basically mentioned the different positions and how he was seated in a very particular way of how a jazz drummer would be seated, like over their set versus how another drummer would. But yeah, I don't know about the sticks really. He didn't mention like his grip on the sticks.
I think it's more, it looks better than, you know, for the dramatic effect of having blood from his hands. And if you hold him the regular way, there's no way blood is coming from your thumbs like that.
Maybe it's just grabbing, for, again, dramatic
I'm just grabbing
effect.
My pen right here, and the way that they hold the sticks, there's no way. The only place that you would get it is like along the crease of your index finger. That's like the place where most of the balance is on your drumstick. And you're not going to bleed like that. You're just not. Unless you have a cut there from before, but you don't just develop a cut in like that. So, yeah. I mean, so that's stuff like that, you know, the unrealistic parts of the movie did kind of take me out of the movie for a little bit. So that's why I scored stuff not great, but good.
Yeah.
You know?
Talking about unrealistic, one thing I didn't appreciate about the writing was the unrealistic nature of the insults. I hate when insults are too elaborate. It bothers me.
Clearly written, are you talking about the dinner table scene?
Written. Huh?
Are you talking about the
dinner table scene? Yes.
And, no, Fletcher.
And just Fletcher himself, yeah. Because Fletcher, he knows exactly, oh, I'm going to bring up his dad and his failed writing career. I'm going to bring up his mom that left him. But then, you know what was a good insult?
I thought that was standard practice with Fletcher. Because he's like all
that elaborate.
He's all nice, and he tries to get information to emotionally abuse people later with. He was like, I'm going to get something like, I can use on these kids.
What was the original first drummer? Tanner, right? Yeah. When Neiman loses the sheets at that concert at that competition, and Tanner loses it like with him, he's like, you dumb fuck, he just keeps saying that. I'm like, that's a real insult, like when you're so mad that you don't know what to say, you just repeat the same stupid insult over and over again,
right?
Not Tanner's elaborate like multi-layered insult. That took me out.
What if he was faking it, right? Some people can muster that anger for performance. We know that Fletcher wanted to get the most out of these kids, so it could have been a performance. I don't know, I'm just playing devil's advocate a little bit.
I'm just saying that's kind of a few things in writing that I was like, oh, why they do it like this? Just keep it real.
It kept it entertaining though, right?
Very creative, very entertaining, very creative insults. Yeah. But
I love the dinner table scene where he tells his cousins or whoever those kids are, it's like four words that you'll never hear from the NFL for the quarterback to get into the NFL, and then his own dad's like, four words you'll never hear from the Lincoln Hall or something. It's like, dang.
No, he didn't ask that. Like, he said, "Did you hear anything from
Lincoln?"
He would not insult his son like that. Come on, bro.
But he does.
Well, I think he said it to bring his son down.
Well, he said it to like say like, "Hey, look in the mirror before you start insulting people." That's what his point is. But he's not he's not literally insulting him the same way.
Yeah,
his dad was an awesome character in this movie because he's the one like we can see how disconnected Andrew is from like everything else. The Nicole stuff like with his girlfriend for like two scenes. Like, that was super rushed and just, like, kind of...
Super stupid, right?
Yeah, kind of just thrown in there just so they can add that layer to this overall, like, story arc for him that he's not going to be in a relationship because he's too busy. But the one with his dad, both the dad's acting, which was really good, especially in that last scene when he's just basically watching his son, like, have an out-of-body experience, and his dad has, like, the look in him like, I don't know who my son is, right? Yeah. And that's, like, where you kind of get that feeling really... Where that's the family sacrifice right there. Like, there's a father and son who do love each other very much, but they have nothing in common and no connection because
they have the cinema
so focused.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Even it's just superficial at a certain level, and I think that's what they're trying to portray. So props on them for doing it well.
Yeah, the music in this movie I love.
Yeah, I agree.
I love the music in this music, like all of the songs that they chose to play. I just love them, dude. I just love the bass tone that dude did when Caravan comes on. It's a do 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 do.
Yeah, are these? So I don't know any of my jazz music at all, but are these like famous jazz songs?
I don't know. I don't know jazz. I'm not like I love jazz music, but I'm not like I don't know anything about it. I'm one of those. You know what I mean? I don't know if those are really like famous tracks, but I loved them. And the last scene, we got to talk about the last scene here, right?
Let's talk about it. Cause that's pretty epic.
That's one of my favorite scenes of like any movie that, especially on a close, because it leaves things ambiguous narratively, but also just the.
But to do like that dramatic,
I don't know, the effect.
Yeah, but to do like that dramatic of a scene. At the very end, that's impressive because most movies will save it for like 10 minutes prior to the close so they can wrap things up. But here they just put it at the very end and it's impressive. Yeah.
That a lot on this podcast where we always feel like they dragged it out too much. They could have ended it, 5-10 minutes earlier when this happened, in a more dramatic moment. And in this movie, they landed right on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it realistic for somebody to do that in a thing?
What, a drum solo to go off the rails?
We all agreed that none of this is to go off the rail and just like start a song and then cue in the rest of the band for a whole song.
Yeah, that's
and then end it and keep going and then cue in the next song. No, that's not realistic at all.
Right.
But it was a cool. It was cool. It was a cool thought, and that was his revenge against Fletcher, saying like, "You're gonna try to bring me down, but I'm not gonna do that because I'm looking past you. This is greatness that I'm achieving."
Yeah.
You know, and Fletcher is just an observer at that point. He's just a witness to it. So I thought it was. I love the ending because it brought things full circle. We're talking about the cost of great, and we're talking about like the relationship that they both have. What Fletcher is trying to do through the whole movie. What Neiman's trying to do through the whole movie. And at the end, that's Fletcher realizes he's achieved it. His goal of bringing a Charlie Parker into the world, of pushing someone to greatness. And Teller is like, you know, saying this, thinking the same thing, that he's achieved greatness. Because anybody in the audience seeing that is going to want him.
Yeah, they know.
You know?
He's a real deal.
I mean, and there's so much that they did just in terms of like the setting up that scene, in terms of the tone.
The shots. So like they have that one camera that pans back and forth between between Neiman and between Fletcher, right? It just keeps, it shows like Fletcher and then Neiman. They're both looking at each other and it's just... and then how they kind of, which each sequence of during the solo, they cut in closer and closer to their faces, and like until the very end where they just show both of them, like basically their eyes, where they both have that realization you just mentioned, Farhan, and then they close it out with the last note.
Yeah.
I don't know what you call it.
To be fair though, I mean, there's better drumming than that. So it's if somebody watches a lot of drumming, they can see that and be like, okay, I mean, that's just kind of like, it's a good solo. They're like, yeah, whatever. You know what I mean?
It's not that impressive.
From what I could tell, he pretty much had stopped drumming after he got kicked out of the school. Because when Fletcher asks him to, hey, you wanna be in the band, he's like taking out the old drum set or something, isn't he?
Yeah.
So like he's like getting back into it. He's still a student. He's still an amateur in the eyes of like, you know, those in that community, in that society. So for that level, he was impressive.
Yeah. No, for sure. Fahad, I'm surprised that you didn't talk about the color palettes in this movie.
I didn't notice anything about the color palettes.
Really?
Really?
I kind of did.
So I
okay,
one
so
thing
the New York scenes, they're like bluish, blackish. They're all nearly depicted in nighttime. The interior shots where they're in the conservatory or they're in stage, there's a lot of oranges and yellows, right? Sepia tones. What else is going on with the color palettes? Does it tell a story?
I mean, that's
by itself?
Kind of the whole. That's a lot of it.
Okay, gotcha.
I don't know about that. That's your thing, but no, I think you're right. It's dark kind of throughout the movie, but then there's like it's dim. There's like dim lights throughout. I don't know how you would term that, but.
Just like moody
it's like
lights.
Like a restaurant vibe, right?
Yeah.
Like a fancy restaurant, very dim lights.
Even I mean, like, it's jazz club vibes.
Yeah. Even like the studio band's like classroom, it's super dim in there. It's not like it's a brightly lit classroom.
Yeah. I don't know what the purpose is. It's just something that I noticed.
Okay. I mean, one thing I did notice was how in the very first scene, we have Neiman practicing the drums, right? And he's wearing like a white like t-shirt and... throughout the movie, his clothing gets darker, pretty much. It goes from, like, white to, like, blue to black or to gray. And then eventually he's wearing black, which is pretty much how Fletcher dresses the entire movie. He's always wearing all black.
Interesting.
That's so one thing I noticed with colors.
That. So is he imitating him?
But visually, I didn't think much about it. But Fahad, you really like the aesthetics here. So you want to talk about we talked a bit about the sound. I mean, other than the music that they're playing itself.
Look,
I didn't notice much beyond that.
I don't have any details to like glow over, right? But I just enjoyed how it looked and how it sounded to the point where I gave it a really good score because it almost carries the movie with how good and how good it sounds, how good it looks, and how
fair enough. I mean, it did win best achievement in sound mixing, and I can get behind that because for movies, I mean, we talked about it with some other ones, but like where, you know, some songs are like so loud, dialogue is so low, like, you know, it's just not like you have to like literally like up the volume or lower it while you're watching it. But in this, it actually is pretty level. Like, even when it gets loud, it doesn't get like unbearably loud. When it is quiet, it's not like you can't even hear it. It's not like that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's as far as I'll talk about in terms of sound. For a movie that's like, you know, so much, there's so much range in the sound. It is impressive that they were able to keep it level.
It's a pretty short movie.
Yeah, and I think, you know,
It was like an hour and 40
minutes. But in terms of like repetition, like it all like blends together to make like a short feeling movie where there's nothing unique going on between scene to scene.
Yeah, it's well directed. I mean, that's definitely the directing. Yeah. You know?
The actual short that was Whiplash before it got picked up was 18 minutes. Okay. So they added about, 70 minutes to that?
Mm-hmm.
75 minutes to that?
Mm. Do they get into the whole story with the short?
I don't know, man. I haven't seen the short. So the tagline for the short is, "A ferocious, bullying music teacher teaches a dedicated student." So it's the same thing. But they probably don't have the family dynamic as much. They probably don't have the girlfriend stuff in there. They don't have, like, the multiple iterations of competitions or setbacks. They probably just have one.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably the differences.
Yeah.
Yeah, overall, a good movie. Definitely, I think everybody should watch. It's, you know, it's a movie that does everything well.
Pretty good,
I'm not going to say exceptionally well. I'm not going to say they do everything, you know, everything's great. But they do everything pretty, I think, well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So a really good overall movie in terms of all of our... I think this is the most... this is the closest I have been throughout a whole movie in category-wise. 80s, 85 and 1.
Yeah. You know? Actually, I think City of God, Farin, you gave 85 across the board, I think, right?
Okay.
No. That was not it. It was another movie that you gave, like, 85 across the board.
Yeah, I don't remember, man. We've done a lot of movies. But yeah, I think it's a good movie. And I think it is a must-watch.
Yeah, agreed. It's a really good, entertaining movie.
Yeah, it is entertaining. It is good. It can be difficult at times to watch, though.
Because of the berating?
Yeah, mainly because of the berating. It's uncomfortable, I guess. I shouldn't say difficult to watch. It's uncomfortable to watch at some moments.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Especially like even when he gets in that car accident and he's still trying to get to the show. It's like mind-bogglingly uncomfortable. It's like, dude, what are you doing? Stop it.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, and in that scene, Fahad, I assume you're not rooting for him, right? You don't want him to make it to the show, right?
I mean, I'm just... I don't know what he's doing in that scene. I'm like, what? Whatever, dude. Chase your dreams.
Yeah.
But when he shows up bloody on the stage, I'm like, how are you going to perform in this?
He doesn't, right? He doesn't, so...
Yeah, the fact that Fletcher didn't take him off was...
Right.
Come on.
Because they're performing in front of an audience. You can't have a bloodied drummer. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guys, let's be real, too. Fletcher's the one who probably took the sheet music when he put it on the chair.
Yeah, because he literally said, don't... No, but how would he have gotten to it?
I don't know, man. But that's... What else would have happened? It just disappeared?
And you're talking about early on, right?
I mean,
right?
There's no great explanation for it.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
early on.
What basically propels him to be the performer at the competition.
Okay.
There's no great explanation for that, so...
Yeah, it's just a plot device.
Yeah. It's a random plot device.
Okay, guys. I think we're good at this spot.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Peace.
Thanks for listening to this production of The Twice Over. If you enjoyed this episode, consider subscribing and sharing it with a friend. Want to see what your tally is? Check out thetwiceover.com. All the movies we've done are listed there, as well as what we're watching for the current week. Follow us at The Twice Over on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, where you can leave us any suggestions, feedback, or comments. And if you're about it, you can also support us on Patreon. The music you hear on this podcast is from Amerigo Gazaway. You can find his work on Bandcamp and Spotify.